Forager Health Podcast, clearing the path to true vitality. I invite you to rise with us. Let us sow the seeds of compassion in our relationships, with ourselves, with each other, and with the land. Let us take our creation, our lived experience, beyond where it's been before. Let us ask ourselves what would happen if we were to open our hearts even more. And may we be guided toward our overall highest outcomes by joining together on this day. Hello and welcome to another episode of Forager Health Podcast. Today's show is really special because I am sitting down live and in person with a dear friend of mine, Joshua Logan Young. He is an intimacy and relationship coach and a master of sacred sexuality. He is an example of full presence born from a lot of cultural conditioning and societal and mental torture and trials and tribulations, and born of the fire of acknowledging the dissatisfaction and pain in his life and actually going out and doing something about it and having the mind to change the way he lived in the past. Not only the mind, but the ambition to go out and really effectively grow into the person that he was meant to be, as opposed to staying as the version of himself that was created through the circumstance of where our society now stands and where our young men and women now, for the most part, grow up without anyone leading as an example of presence and humility and embracing of the highest self in order for us to have that person to look up to. And so Josh now has a passion for, through unraveling the conditioning that he was playing in his own mind and expressing in his own life, he now helps others be that person for themselves who have not had the role models that we all deserve. And him and his partner, Kelsey, who's mentioned throughout the episode, are really, really powerful facilitators of that change and just that little spark of imagination of what more could I be? What could I act out? Who could I express if I were to acknowledge the pain that I've caused myself and others by being the way that I have been in the past? And then what are the possibilities if I really set the intention? Not only set it, but really try to express the intention of being something and someone more. And so this is a really, really great episode. It's super heartfelt. It's intimate. It's pretty touchy. It's going to press some buttons for y'all. It's going to be a little bit triggering at times, as the best of conversations are. And there's a treasure trove of really good, valuable, actionable information here, as well as just a really great, insightful, and powerful reflection between the two of us. So having said that, please don't forget that if you enjoy the show and you feel like it's added value to your day, to your week, to your life, share it with a friend, someone you know who you might think it would benefit in some way, and also go on iTunes and leave us that 5-star review, leave us a couple short sentences and a rating. That'd be fantastic. You can also rate us on Spotify. That would be wonderful. It really helps me know that I am providing some sort of light, some sort of wisdom, some sort of spark of inspiration for you out in the world, and gives me the spark of inspiration I need in order to continue hosting and producing the show. It's basically a part-time job. I'm doing it all on my own. It's a really big commitment. I love doing it. I also love seeing that you love that I am here. So that's the way that you can help me continue on, and the way that you can help the show get out to more people. You can find Josh at Instagram at jloganyoung. You can find his partner Kelsey at Heal with Kels, which is K-E-L-S. Rest sounds rather self-explanatory. Hunt down their couples page, which is a little bit newer, called Snack Pack, with a bunch of underscores on either side. That's a pretty good one. Those are some vulnerable shares. Like, I love that. Really, really powerful stuff. So check out all three pages. And without further ado, here is my fantastic and wide-ranging conversation with my good friend, Joshua Logan Young. So today, joining me on the show, live and in person, is my good friend, Josh Young. I met Josh since moving to the Lancaster, Pennsylvania area. He is just a really dear, like, brother. We've only hung out, like, a few times, and just the connection has been so strong right off the bat from, like, our first time kind of conversing. It was very obvious how much of a wisdom seeker that you are and how genuine you are in your exploration of yourself and of human potential. And most importantly for today's conversation, like, the potential of human relationships, which is just so near and dear to my heart. And so, like, I'm really glad to be able to sit across from you and have a conversation that we can then share with the collective, because, you know, I have my blueprints as always, but who knows what we're going to get into today, you know? So welcome. And thank you for joining me on Forager Health Podcast, because this is awesome.
Thank you, brother. That was wonderful. Mm-hmm. Receiving that sort of praise from somebody like you, meaning somebody just as deep, just as knowledgeable, is feels real good. So thank you.
Totally.
Not always easy to receive.
Yeah, that's a practice in of itself that I feel is almost like a perfect kind of, like, barometer of where we are. Even a barometer is probably not the right term, but, you know, like a needle that moves up and down of, like, how connected to your center you are, because there's a lot that comes before you're comfortable with receiving. A lot. Yeah. And then one day you're just like, oh shit, I'm still really not okay receiving a compliment or, like, praise for the work that you do. And I feel like that's kind of almost like a late stage development of trying to be comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that initial part of, like, wait, somebody likes what I do?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, especially if it's like, if that's something that you didn't grow up with. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Or you just had to, like, prove yourself. Me and Kelsey were talking about today, we kind of just landed on how almost everything we do is a trauma response in some way, shape, or form from something we got too much of or not enough of growing up. So it's like, that's, and that particular, the act of receiving, the skill of receiving, of building that, is something that I've been, like, that's all I've been doing the last 6 months, is really getting into that, like, all right, when somebody gives me a compliment, I, like, initially I used to, you know, you jump into that deflection, right? Where you're like, oh, you know, I'm just doing my job, or, you know, I'm just trying to be, you know, duh, like, and you're like shoving off this love, right? And, like, how often do we do that in a relationship where we cut ourselves off from love because it just, like, either we're not used to feeling it, there's too much of it, and yeah, it's just another way that we get in the way of our potential.
Mm.
So,
yeah, that's beautiful. And it's so, so true. I want to jump into your, like, history in this realm, but I need to latch on to something that you just said and, like, dig in a little deeper. I it's not even like a belief is like kind of like blind faith. Like mm-hmm. I kind of know at this point that most of what we do day to day, like you said, you were discussing with Kelsey, is a trauma response, or it's something that we've worked through that's no longer a trauma response. Yeah. It's one or the other. It's 50-50.
Yeah.
So I don't, do you see a potential for within our lifetime seeing that become more mainstream? Because now, like, talking about our trauma or our past or our afflictions is becoming a little bit more generally acceptable. But I've been privy to conversations that happen around me where I then either just listen and observe, or I join and then try to poke and prod at people's perspectives when they are questioning whether or not something is from trauma. Like, oh, like this has been going on with my friend and she's been really depressed lately, da 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 da. I feel like it might be from trauma, but this is obviously people, I hear this all the time, mm-hmm. people that don't know the 50-50,
yeah.
right? And then are they know it, but it's almost like they don't want to say it, or trauma itself still has an ick factor as if it's not universal.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I like that that question. I think that what I feel, that's another thing I'm working on, going from think to feel. What was coming to me as you're speaking was, I feel like some folks will hear the word trauma. I mean, we all have trauma. Some will say that, oh, yours is worse than mine, but no man's, you know, path is harder than any other's.
Mm-hmm.
And just like everybody's big T might look different, but it still has that same effect. And there's some folks that see trauma as an excuse to be a certain way. Whereas those who are really evolving in the shadow work look at trauma as an opportunity for. You know what I mean? So for me, moving from that space of like, oh my God, like this shit always happens to me. Like this is, I've done it again in relationship, and like, I like pushed them away, and like, or I've just, you know, dove in too deep, too fast, and gotten to a point where I'm not comfortable being vulnerable anymore. And you're just like, why does this always happen to me? Oh, like this is, but it's okay. Cause I have trauma. Right. So like, hopefully I'll just find the person or find the situation where just I won't be affected anymore. Whereas
wow.
Kelsey and I, this in particular, have really jumped into our trauma like head first, like dove in. We felt like we had enough tools, and that's what all we've been doing is seeing trauma as an opportunity to choose differently.
Hmm.
You know, so going from, oh, anytime I get this deep in vulnerability, I shut down and then I start to push away because, you know, I'm just not ready to go any deeper. Whereas now we're like, okay, like this is, we'll look at each other and be like, this is fucking uncomfortable. And like, you know, here we go, let's jump in and we'll have the hard conversations. And that's really what's gotten us to this continued deepening to where what's on the other side of that trauma is a legitimate waking bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And every time a new situation comes up to trigger that trauma, the bell still dings, the trigger goes off, but the body is like, knows that it's okay. You know, we have the nervous system regulation tools to be able to see it, monitor it, and be like, okay, there's something here for me. I like or don't like this experience. I can choose differently depending on, you know, the scenario. So it's an opportunity for, as opposed to an excuse to be.
I like to say that it's not real if it's no longer felt. And so you said that, you know, the ding still goes off, but then you're able to choose how your nervous system responds, and how your nervous system responds is whether or not you feel the emotion tied to the trigger.
Yeah.
And very nice. So it's really something else the first time you recognize a pattern you would have been in before and choose not to engage in it.
Yep.
So that's really, really powerful.
Yeah. And then you're like, yay, healing. Yay, growth.
Yeah.
Let's do it. What was that? Say that one more time. That little nugget was, it's not real if it's no longer felt.
Yeah.
Right. It was never real to begin with. It just, I like that.
I think at one point it has to be real because reality is all inclusive, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be real for you just because it's been real in your past. So like when you feel it, it is as real as the sky is blue.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to continue to be a reality.
Yep. Hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well done.
Once again, like, I feel pulled. We're just going to go wherever we go, and we'll put together the pieces however they fall. But you mentioned that you continue to mention in our relationship and our deep conversations that we've had in the past, these conversations that you have between you and your partner.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to know, like, what it looks like. Are there steps that you take for doing this couple's trauma work? And what do the conversations entail? How are you conversing in ways that break down these obstacles that you're facing and then change them into ways that you're growing together?
Yeah, it's really right now, because what I feel, and really what I know, like, there's very few role models for this. There's no playbook on how to have a vulnerable conversation, a regulated nervous system, maintaining that during a vulnerable traumatic conversation, is there's almost no, you know, playbook for that. There's a bunch of different little books that have a bunch of different little tools that are now helping us do what we're doing. So right now it's very much intuitive in a lot of ways, channeled. And that's our work that we've chosen to do, because we feel like we're really paving the way for this new type of connection, this new type of relationship, where we fluidly move between the construct of polarity. So, you know, alpha, omega, masculine, feminine, being able to jump into business mode together, go to a cafe where we both jump into alpha, or both in our masculine and we're putting our heads together on a project, or, you know, we're cuddling in bed, watching a show or something like that. We'll move into omega, right? And then when we want to have some spicy, sexy time, we'll move into alpha, omega, and really stretch those pulls and create that friction that's needed for polarity. And really, like I said, there is no playbook. We've been documenting as much as we can in this process, so we can, you know, go back and look at how to maybe teach this, or like just display it and show it and be able to communicate to others, like how we do what we've done. But I think that idea of, I mean, really the main thing that has kept us in it and answering the call has been the devotion factor. Really, like, raw, just devotion. Because and a willingness to look at your part of it, your 50%, right? Or your 100%, however you want to look at it. There's, you know, both perceptions create that reality. So I'm constantly looking at, like, okay, where have I gone wrong here? You know, where have I caused this rift? Where have I caused a rupture or damage to our container? We like to refer to our relationship as like keeping our water clear, keeping it clean. So there's no muck, there's no deception, there's no lies. It's just, you know, we're constantly like circulating and filtering our water to keep it nice and clean. And to do that, it's the devotion factor. It's the willingness to be vulnerable and have those hard conversations. And it's not always like, for me, I don't always know what it is I'm feeling. I just know that something's feeling off. And then it's up to me to decide if I'm going to put that on my partner, or if I'm going to look within and face it and be like, all right, where's this muck coming from? Where's this shit coming from? And so, like, the original question was, like, how do we have these conversations, right?
Yeah, like, what do they look like?
What do they look like?
Yeah.
What it looks like is, I'm trying to think of a recent time where we kind of had like a little bit of a, I mean, really, we had a whole month and a half. We had a 6-week period where we were just grinding it out. And like she mentioned to me afterwards, after we like started to see the light at the end of this tunnel of like our shadow work together, And she was like, yeah, there was times when I was like ready to end the relationship. And I was like, fuck. Like I had no idea. Because on my end, my typical tendency is to avoid or leave or to abandon, right? So my tendency would be like, okay, the relationship has soured. I gotta go. I gotta leave.
Yep.
So my medicine in this has been to do the exact opposite and take that option completely off the table. Like if I want to live the type of life that I want to live and be who I want to be, this is how that man lives. And so I was just like, that option of ending the relationship was never on the table for me. And that was my medicine. For her, her tendency was to stay way too long in a relationship that was soured. So her medicine in this was to put it on the table and be like, I'm ready to end this relationship right now. And us both deciding to choose each other over and over and lean into that devotion and be like, if this conversation takes 2 hours, 2 days, 2 weeks, we just have to keep coming back to it and using our tools of nervous system regulation so that we can be sure we're coming from a rooted, loving place as opposed to like a scared, triggered, like, you did this or you did that. It's like really using the breath, right? Letting our bodies know that we're okay, because when we were young, like that's when all the shit was stored in our body. And my gosh,
imagine like every conversation growing up that is an important conversation to have, at least in my experience and the people that I had as like my inner circle of friends back, you know, in my teens or whatever, all the way up through your teens. A serious conversation was either you're in trouble, mm-hmm. and there might not be yelling, but you're in trouble. Or it's like an argument.
Yep.
And there's nothing else. Yeah. So to be able to sit across from somebody that you actually care about,
mm-hmm.
so much comes up just in the context of what you're actually doing, let alone the content of the conversation itself.
Yeah. And that third option of, we just don't talk about it.
Right. There's that right. one. Of course. 'Cause like, silly me.
Yeah, yeah. So like, you know, it's like that the dreaded words of like, we need to talk. It's like, oh shit. You're like, oh, like everything starts to tighten up. You get that. Because your body knows that when it's time to talk, it means that we've put off this thing so long that we knew was on the surface. Because if we didn't know, we wouldn't have that reaction to, we need to talk. We would just, if somebody mentioned, we need to talk, you would be blindsided by it. And you'd be like, oh, surprised. Be like, oh, what do you want to talk about? Other than, oh shit, like we got to talk about that thing that we've been avoiding. So yeah, really, really diving into that and just being fucking uncomfortable in that and just trusting that, okay, the best thing is going to happen whether we continue to move forward in this relationship or not. So yeah, the devotion and the willingness to just look at your shit, really. Like I said, using the breath, calming the nervous system, letting you know like, hey, you're safe, you're okay, like everything's great, but we need to have this conversation. It's little conversations like that over and over with your body.
Did you both collectively decide or talk about how to have one of these conversations before they started happening? Like, did you come together and be like, hey, let's both remember to breathe when we need to, for example? Or did you just kind of like grow into that?
Really, really growing into it. Yeah, it wasn't like a known... Because we've both been doing the work for, like, I say the work because it's just an easy way to encapsulate doing, you know, everything it is to mend these patterns. And it really, yeah, it would be more of a growth because there is no playbook for these, you know, these tactics and these things. They are individually. And there's more resources coming out, which is really great. And really what helped us was we'd have a rupture, have the repair conversation, and then we'd have a conversation about the repair. And then we'd look back and track, okay, you know, how did this time, you know, we were able to stay regulated in our nervous system and not be triggered and not act from ego. How did we get to that point? So sometimes that looks like, oh, I really concentrated on my breath in this conversation, or leading up to it, I really got myself into a space of my power. Because when you're in your power, when you're feeling good about the things that you're doing outside of the relationship to take care of yourself, tending to your vessel, when you show up in your power, you can't be rattled, right? It's only when we're really tired, we're really weak, or we're just not taking care of ourselves, we're a little overextended, where we jump into like a defense response, like, oh, like, you know, I didn't mean to do that, so like, here's why I did this, and then I'll over explain, or like this or that. Those have happened, like, which further increase the rupture, right? Yeah. Even more damage is done. But there's always that repair conversation, and then working back to, yeah, regulating the nervous system, taking care of our vessel, and making sure we can get ourselves in a good place to have these conversations if we decide to come back to them later.
I really like the concept of reviewing the conversation that was the healing conversation and seeing what went right and what went wrong. That is actually a really awesome concept. I feel like it's a good time to jump back and ask you how you came into this space where you were energetically in a place to even attract a relationship like you have with Kelsey. And then also what the catalyst was for chasing this level of awareness. Because I know that your journey, I'll say one thing and then shut up, has been kind of like on a catapult trajectory. Yeah. Like, it's been a very, I don't like to talk about time the way other people do, but it's been on a condensed timeline where all of this transformation has taken place. So tell us about where you were before you decided that however you were living was not the way you wanted to live. And then what it looked like getting out of wherever you were.
Yeah. And I like that, because really I could touch on that, you know, that history and going into my story, which is I grew up in a very chaotic environment, especially like chaotic relationships. So grandparents, alcoholism, right? They're really big into alcohol, which happens. And my parents as well just had no tools, right? My dad's dad left when he was like 3. My mom's parents, you know, they had her when they were like kids, 18, 19, had no clue what they were doing. More people, you know, who just didn't have tools. And so that kind of got passed on to me. And I, you know, it's one of those things where you bear the sins of your father. And I've ruined so many relationships, so many over and over. I've like continued to hurt people that I love the most, or that I loved at one time. And that, it just didn't feel good. I didn't want to do it. And I continued to choose. I chose to do it continuously and over. And I'd be like, why am I doing this again? I was a liar, a cheater, a manipulator. What a lot of people nowadays would probably call a narcissist, for sure. Just a massive, massive ego. And from a very young age, I wanted to do the work. So I remember one of the very first times I actually declared that I would do work was I had to be like 14, 15, 16 in that time period. Again, time is so fuzzy. But getting my first whiff of astrology, being like, oh, I'm a Scorpio, and like reading, like, you know, the stuff about that, and seeing that, like, oh, I'm naturally extremely jealous. And I was like, okay, like, well, I don't like this feeling of wanting to, you know, kill this kid in eighth grade because he's talking to the girl that I like, right? Who I haven't even talked to because I'm too scared to talk to you. And like, I don't want to feel this jealousy. Like, this is not good for me. This is not helping me. So that was the first thing that I really went head on with and just tackled. And I got married when I was 19, had a daughter very young, and was terrible husband. When I was there, I was a great father, loved my daughters more than anything, and I would never want my daughters to be treated how I treated women, ever. I was always wonderful to their face, really wanted to serve. But when it came down to like really committing and devoting to somebody, I had no clue or idea how to do that, or that it was even possible. My understanding was that when you meet the right person, it just works naturally and there's no work involved. You just change overnight and it's just perfect and you happily ever after. And so I just waited around for that, right? I would explore all the options over and over. Like I would go out and cheat and looking for that peak experience that was going to last. And I got to a point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like I'm not being the example I want to be for my daughter. I'm not. Before I knew what integrity was and alignment was, I was wildly out of it and had no idea how to get back. But I was like, I'm just going to do it. I just declared. I was like, I'm going to stop doing this. And in that, it started to wane. I met a girl, divorced my wife. Actually, met a girl before I divorced my wife because I was still a piece of shit at the time. I made the declaration and, you know, I caused this new relationship, even though I was devoted, even though I gave everything I could to it. I caused a lot of trauma because of how I entered into that relationship. It was so unclean. I didn't close the loops of the past. I wasn't clear with my ex-wife at the time. Wasn't clear with how things were going to go between us then because I couldn't have the heart conversation. I didn't know how. I was too scared to tell her that I couldn't do it anymore. And let her feel it. Not just my words, but like let her feel like I couldn't do this. I couldn't face her. And I caused not only her, but her, my daughter, this new woman, and my new daughter, who was coming to be, I was killing them with how I was acting. And fast forward, I really devoted myself to that relationship and forced it. So I devoted and I forced it, and I didn't read the signs. I didn't listen to my body, and I forced it over and over, which caused even more harm to myself and to her. So yeah, just that declaration of like, show me the way. Like I need some help. It was like probably the first time I really started believing in like the universe or God or something else. Cause I was a massive, massive cynic, hated the world, hated people because I hated myself. I had so much shame around what I had done. And I just hated myself. So it just naturally, that's the world that was reflected to me was, you know, strife. So I finally fast forward, got to the point where I started to just remove things that kept me in that vibration of being a walking garbage man. Like man of garbage. And the way that I began to care for the feminine and care for the daughter, care for my daughters and really be present with them and start to have those hard conversations and be with these women that I'd hurt and not leave emotionally, not leave mentally and just numb it out, but really feel what I had done. So fast forward again, and, you know, still had some tendencies here and there to avoid the hard conversation. Still would be, I would call myself a little bit of like a spiritual player, where I would find these connections with women, all meant for both of our growths, which was great. Like I was always very good to these women as well, but I could never commit. I could never really forge that awakened union, that sacred union that I really wanted. I just still wasn't ready for. Until I met Kelsey, and that actually happened through Instagram. I had messaged her about something she had posted about a men's group, and she said, oh yeah, message if you know, want more information. So I messaged, I was like, hey, I would love this. I'm involved in a couple men's groups and I would love to expand the community. And naturally we just started talking, and we talked for about a week just over Instagram, and then she said, hey, she's an expert, and she's really led the way in having the hard conversations. And she was like, hey, I'm feeling romantic feelings for you. What's up? You know, kind of a thing. And I was like, ooh, I was like, shit, like I really had to check in with my body, because at that point I had really caused some damage to some women. I brought them very deep into themselves, into love, without fully committing. I wanted to commit. I was trying to commit, and something in me just was not. So I was at this point in time very, very like hyper aware of my natural tendency to dive into something, right? The shiny object effect of like, wow, like the lived experience of falling in love is like very addictive. And so I'd really check in and be like, okay, can I, like I asked myself, I'm like, can I commit to this woman? Because the way that I wanted to live was like, if I'm speaking with you romantically, if I'm flirting with you, if I'm showing you romantic love, if I'm sleeping with you, like I essentially feel you're my wife. Like I'm committed to you, because, you know, say you get pregnant or things that happen like that, like externally, sure. But energetically, I needed to be that way. I needed to tell myself that the next person that I'm with is going to be like my person. Like I'm going to create the sacred union that I want, because I'm no longer going to tolerate anything else in my life. Like I really had that discipline to my alignment. So I asked, and everything in my body was a surprising, like, yes, you can. And I was like, whoa, this is brand new. So I dove in and took leaving the relationship, even from that very, I had no idea who this woman was. I'd never met her in person, but we had this amazing connection over the phone. And that's prior to her asking if she had romantic feelings. I had asked her if she wanted to jump on a phone call, told her I had an hour, like set everything up. And we had an amazing phone call. She actually made me cry the first time we talked, which was really beautiful. She told me that I had created in that week just a really safe space for her to share, and which was like everything I ever wanted to hear as a man, was that I was finally making the feminine feel safe. And that fucking moved me like it is now. I think I'm just like reliving that experience. And, yeah, from that moment, I was just devoted. And that's, yeah, we're here.
Thank you so much for that incredible reflection, man. You being able to articulate what's really interesting to me is your knowing that you are yearning really deeply and badly for a way that wasn't your current way long before you would grow enough in order to be able to embody that way of living is very interesting to me, because I feel like a lot of people never get past that pain point of knowing that they want something else or other than what they have. I don't think that it's so simple and easy as to say, I woke up one day and I decided that devotion was my new core principle, you know, and there's so many people that hit their quote unquote rock bottom. We talk about rock bottom a lot on the show, believe it or not, where things are pressured to the point where change occurs.
Yeah.
But the pain point of people's rock bottom, I believe there are tons of people walking around at that high pressure point or state for long periods of time without actually making the change.
Yeah.
Was there anything that occurred, a learning or a happening other than Kelsey coming into your life any one or two of your biggest realizations or acquirements of wisdom that allowed you to go from unable to commit to your true self or to your relationships to not knowing anything other than your true self? As like it, right now, if you betrayed yourself in a large way, let's say, because we all still struggle with traumas on a daily basis, it would almost be like it would be trying to press like the negative and the negative ends of two magnets together. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
You know, because you've already taken the dive.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's you're a great host, buddy.
Thank you.
Well done. Yeah, such good questions. Getting to that true self was really where when I started really developing like my own practice on my own, like after these ruptures and after these relationships where I told you I had that kind of refractory period where I was like, no relationships, like I'm good, like I'm declaring myself single, the different kind of single where I actually like delete all of my like booty calls, you know, like the actual single, which was fucking miserable because I had to really like look at me, like look at myself. I really started to develop a consistent sexual energy practice, working with like, you know, the Kundalini and getting into trauma work. It's not necessarily, I think you decide the speed. So I don't like saying like slow or fast or anything like that. I like to use depth. And there was so much that I had ignored for so long, that I didn't look at for so long, that I would numb out from. So you're saying how like, you know, the pressure makes a diamond, kind of that reference a little bit earlier. I put myself into so many pressure cooker situations throughout my life. This is actually really cool to think about. So I put myself into all these different pressure cookers throughout my life, but I was so good at numbing myself that I never got to feel any of them until I started removing these layers and constantly going back through the Rolodex and using my imagination, both willingly and unwillingly, to bring myself back to those stages. So using that shame that I carried to bring me back and go through all these situations again and actually feel the shit that I didn't feel all along. And I think that has really like catapulted me forward. So it's like almost, you know, it's exponential, like to where I no longer, not that I no longer have to deal with them, but anytime that comes up again, like the opportunity to have the hard conversation or not, like I have the hard conversation now. I take up more space in that instead of safely not having the card conversation, just kind of avoiding it and just bounce. So I think that has continued to help me lead myself to myself, to like what I actually want. Like it seemed like I was so lost before, I didn't know how to get to where I was going, but making the declaration and just, again, I didn't know that I was ready for that relationship. You know, I thought there was maybe more work to do or things like that, but it just, I had done as much work as I could on my own. I had capped that level out, right? That level, we'll call it level 3 of like, I've done the work, I've hit the shadows, I've, you know, like really mended some things, and I can see myself acting different in the world. Like I'm making different choices, I'm staying in alignment. So like I'm good here, and then boom, the relationship starts and it's almost like you're back to like square one. You get that nice little honeymoon phase, which we can get into that later, but I think that's more of a preview as to what's possible when you do the work, as opposed to some fleeting thing. So once you pass that honeymoon phase, you really drop into like that's the option for couples all over to start doing the shadow work, because it's like the growth of the relationship is dependent on you. Like if you're not growing, if you're not looking at these shadows and doing this work and expanding, how is your relationship gonna reflect that? So, you know, you get out of that honeymoon phase and you have a choice to either continue to deepen into the work or long for the honeymoon phase and ignore the work and wonder why your relationships aren't working. That's essentially what I did for a long time. I did as much work as I was comfortable with in the relationship. And then as soon as it started to like wane a little bit and I had to do the real work, I fucking bounced. So I didn't come upon that word devotion until I really like dug in with Kelsey. And now looking back on it, that's what I was after the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, like I didn't even know the word because I was so far away from that vibration of true devotion that it wasn't even in my Rolodex in my head. There was no such thing. So yeah, it's interesting to think about. This conversation is really like, you know, making me like, you know, really think about my own development into that. Yeah, just that willingness is what got me ready and just declaring like, this is what I want in my life. I'm not going to tolerate anything else.
And there's a difference between, and light bulb kind of just went off, that's connecting the dots for me here. There's a big difference between wanting and even declaring and then the actual willingness to follow through. Like the willingness to not give up when things don't look pretty for the next long while after you decide to try to change, because they don't, you know. Today, for if I may speak for both of us, sometimes it's just ugly. And I think that happens, like if you're still in a body on earth, things are going to be ugly sometimes. Lord help me if that's not true. I do want to kind of get a little bit more granular though.
Yeah.
When you say that you began to do the work, there are actual things involved.
Yeah, like the tactics.
Nowadays, like I would refer to that as a ritual or a practice, spiritual practice, personal practice, whatever you want to call it. What has been like one or two of like your biggest catalysts, whether that's something that you were doing every day or a particular event or happening, like get into a little bit of that?
Yeah. I'd say really the very first pillar was diet.
Okay.
Food.
I want to interject. Yeah, really
please,
quick
please
before
do
continue.
Yeah, yeah.
When you were talking about the relationships and the context that you need to have the relationship in, and it's just like, oh, you can't be tired, you can't be run down, you have to pick the right time. The one thing that you left out that went off in my head that I felt like interrupting then too is inflammation.
Inflammation.
Because if you are inflamed, your nervous system is already overwhelmed and you don't even know it. And then when somebody says something that triggers you,
you're like,
your bucket's already full. But anyway, continue.
No, that's perfect. Yeah. Absolutely. Really, that was the first pillar was diet and getting my relationship with food, because I was never a big drinker. I did get into pot because pot allowed me to eat so much food. You know, you get the munchies, right? Like, oh, I'm like really feeling depressed or XYZ right now. Like, I'll just smoke a bowl, take a bong rip and eat a bunch of food. So that's initially first started to change. Well, I can still eat a bunch of food and numb out, but I'm going to make that food good food. And that was the first kind of pillar. Like I started eating all organic. I went plant-based for a while, which had its benefits. That's not where I'm at anymore. Actually quite the opposite. As you saw from my breakfast the other day.
We are similar in that regard.
Very. Whole other podcast even we could probably talk about. Anyway, so it was diet was the first pillar that went. And then I would say after diet was working with the breath. The breath really helped me regulate my nervous system, which I didn't even know at the time I was regulating my nervous system. I didn't understand any of that work. But just learning how to breathe. Then I would say, actually, maybe before that, my relationship with food was fasting. Fasting was a huge one because it it allowed me to unnumb from all the food, and feel. So like, even though I didn't want to fast, I hated it. Like, there was that initial detox where I'm like, oh, I need to eat. I'm hypoglycemic and I got to eat every 2 hours, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, getting past that and feeling like at like that 6 hour, I'd be like, oh, I actually feel pretty good. Cool. And then a couple hours later being like, I've never been hungrier in my life. So there's, you know, just the, yeah, I know you've experimented with fasting too. So it's like just feeling all that, using the breath to feel full, which led me to the spiritual piece, to starting to believe in something greater, because I had to, because I was really feeling the weight of the world, like my world and the collective world of how unfree we are, you know. That caused almost like kind of like a psychosis of sorts, where I was just like depressed and deep, and I was in it, and I was really starting to feel spirit or feel God or feel the universe, because I was fasting, because I was getting cleaner with my diet, I wasn't numbing as much. I forgot to throw in that my story piece, my mother passed away about 5 years ago at this point. And which was a big accelerator. That whole scene really, in terms of changing, that really showed me how I showed up for my family in that. So I'm the oldest of five. How I showed up for my family, my brothers and sisters, and how I showed up for everybody who was at the hospital. That was even the people that were raising, that raised me. How I showed up for all them was a glimpse into my potential. Because it, for whatever reason, it dropped me into this place of like just... I was in God mode for myself, like my personal God mode. And I was just like, I felt like all this power. I was holding space. I was having the conversations. I was doing it all with the most open, beaming heart. And I was just like, what is this? Like, I was like, literally, like, I didn't even feel like I was walking. I was like, you know, like levitating around places. And that really gave me a sample of that vibration to where I could lock into that. You know, I would try to find it in certain times. That happened around the time where I was really like, you know, figuring out my relationship with food, navigating a new relationship, a newborn daughter. Yeah, and just, I would say really, once I got all that, the diet, the fasting, the breath, the spiritual piece, really starting to use those tools to face the old shit, because I was using them to navigate the day to day, which was great. And every time something hard happened, I'd feel the triggers. I'd feel the ego flare up. I'd feel all this stuff. And I would just, you know, almost come unhinged. But I had the tools to keep me from becoming unhinged. So then I started to take those tools and go to the past, go inward, go deep. And, yeah, I've done some, you know, transformational breath work, Kundalini yoga. I'm an extremist. So when I find something new, I'm like, turn the dial up all the way, Johnny, let's do it. And finding barefoot hiking and then being like, oh my God, like going for like a quick, like barefoot walk and feeling the charge from it. And then being like, tomorrow I'm going to go for a 10-mile hike barefoot. Like, so I'm a little extreme in that way, which could contribute to the rapid growth, is really being able to push myself in that way.
Fair.
You know, and get me into trouble sometimes. But yeah, those tools in particular, like the breath, yeah, the breath, really cleaning up your diet, like it's so important to get those things in order so you can start working with a full cup, like you're saying.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know why I was surprised when you said diet is the first thing, but on the other hand, I really don't think that I could ever tell people enough that like you don't even know yourself unless you've gone a day of eating nothing but what your actual like body, mind, and spirit actually require.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by a day, I mean let's give it a month, because most people need a lot more than a day to clear out those systems, but yeah, I really don't know that self-discovery can be had without addressing physiology and like your biochemistry, because that's literally the tuning instrument through which we interact with the world, you know. Then we need to jump into, you go from that to this concept of sacred sexuality and that avenue of evolution. How did that transfer take place? Like, what dots connected for you that led you to that, and why do you now use that or teach that in some way as a focal point? Like, what makes it so special, and how did you arrive there?
Yeah, the sacred sexuality piece, it really started, I've always had a really powerful connection and relationship to sex. You know, you could blame it on, not blame it on or anything, but it was just, that was one of my gifts. Like, my physical form was my gift. Like, through, like I talked about eating and stuff like that. Like, I never once have been anywhere close to overweight in my life. I just have, that's my gift, just physiology. And so being able to like move my body and tap into my body during sex was very natural. Obviously, everybody, it's not like I started out as this professional, but I always felt like I had just this massive amount of sexual energy. I started pretty young, was like obsessed with sex, and I just had an extremely unhealthy relationship with sexual energy. I just didn't respect it. I didn't understand the power that I was squandering and the power that I was really abusing and using others to do it. And you see the trail of damage, the trail of tears that you leave when you misuse your own sacred energy, your own sacred sexual energy. So yeah, that's another journey where I started playing with semen retention. I started playing with self-pleasuring without ejaculation. Talking to my root, to my penis, to my testicles, like having conversations, and just treating them like somebody that I loved, as opposed to like something that I use to give and receive pleasure, physical pleasure. And you know, psychedelics also played a big part. That's one I forgot to mention, in those pillars, because it really like opened me up to like the shit that I was doing, like the true harm and how far back the harm goes, as well as how far forward that harm goes. And just really not wanting to perpetuate these cycles anymore. And I know there's so many other men out there who are cheating, who are lying, who are squandering their sexual energy, and at the same time wondering why they're so miserable. Like,
yeah.
Why am I so miserable? It's like, maybe because I was taught that, you know, ejaculating every day was good, or if you don't use it, you lose it. Like, or associating ejaculation with sex at all. And yeah, I was gifted a lot of these concepts through meditation, through breath work, of like, I would say, I'm trying to figure out how to conceptualize. I have a very abstract brain, so, you know, difficult to navigate sometimes. But I'd say that viewing my sexual energy as something that I could use to build a better life for myself, sex was something that I could have whether I was in the bedroom or not. By me, what I mean by that is, the reason, my opinion on why, other than reproductive and needing to, you know, grow the population or keep the population going, sex is something that just about everybody has. We have an innate desire to have it. And the reason why it feels so good is because it's one of the few things on this planet that actually brings us into full presence. Because when you're with, I know for a man, when you're with like a beautiful woman and you're making love to her and you're just in the throes, like, you're fucking lost. You know, like, you don't know who's who. Like, when you're having the real good stuff and you're just, you're full presence. And that's why I think, you know, people might say, oh, we just had a really good sexual chemistry, or, you know, which there's some truth to that. And like, you were present. That's why it was so beautiful. And so if we can take that same level of presence and apply it to a walk in the park, you know, where you're like, man, these leaves are gorgeous. Like this wind, like, oh my God, those flowers are just, this ground feels like it's nice and warm. The sun's on my face. Like you really get into presence. It's like you're having sex with just your waking life. You know, you're feeling pleasure. You're feeling joy. It's just not restricted solely to the bedroom. And you can really feel that energetics, the energetics that come with like getting into full presence is like such a powerful thing. So those are the concepts that were kind of like, that just kind of came to me. Like, why can't I feel, I really started to ponder sex, right? And like why I was so drawn to like the depth that could be attained through sex. I was also noticing the healing properties with my partners in sex. I noticed my heart opening. The more that I could deepen, the more that I could open my heart, the more that I could become present, the longer I could last, the more pleasure she would receive. And it really started to go from, it started to become almost a psychedelic experience. So I started to treat it as such, where I wasn't going into ceremony willy-nilly and just popping mushrooms and going to a buddy's party. Like I was like, oh, like I really want to curate experiences and make this as powerful as possible for both people.
All right. So what I find most fascinating about this concept of you recognizing that the ultimate presence that's brought to us in a intentional sexual experience can be had throughout the rest of your life. That's basically the essence of Tantra, right? Finding that is one thing, but doing the work so that is even findable is another. So I know from my own experience that what's really crazy that not a lot of people talk about is that you have to, or at least I had to recognize why I was having sex and why I was masturbating in order to then even realize that my why in adolescence, in the adolescent ego brain, not necessarily the age, was not the only reason that I could be having sex. And especially as like a type A, like go, go, go personality that's been beaten down over the years. Like I have had to really work hard to get over this concept of like always being busy. And then like when you're busy and your partner's busy in a relationship, sex can become masturbation.
Yep.
And I feel like that's where a lot of people are. And I've been there in the past.
Same.
And then masturbation is also not a moment of presence anymore either, if it ever was. I was really going to ask you at some point in this conversation if it can be had without psychedelics, this realization or this recognizing of why you used to engage in the behavior that you did before you realized that there are other reasons that you can engage in. But for me, it was also psilocybin that brought this recognition of it was like really, really, I'm trying to put it in a nutshell aside from the story of what my actual ceremony revealed to me in that particular instance, but it's very difficult to do so. Basically, I was shown that the reason why I was pleasuring myself for most of my life up to that point, or all of my life, I guess you could say, was rooted in childhood trauma that happened to me before I was like even like maybe like when I was 5 or 6.
Yeah.
Like the reason why I pleasured myself when I pleasured myself was all because of a forgotten memory of a horrible, horrible like experience, not like a sexual abuse experience, but it doesn't have to be.
No,
it can be just a normal like argument or whatever. And then like the abandonment wound that was tied to that argument among others.
Yeah.
And then I had to rewrite my whole sexual story of what I'm doing when there's like sex on the table and why we're here.
Yeah.
Do you believe that people can get there of like wanting to, not only wanting, but then choosing different reasons why without recognizing why they were in the first place? Like, can we make that choice without knowing?
So you're saying make the choice without knowing what our...
why we were engaging in sexual activity to begin with, aside from the basal root instinct.
Yeah.
Remember how we always... We talked about 50-50. It's either trauma or it's, oh, I'm aware and now I'm doing, like, changing why. And that expands to sex, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think... I don't know if that's possible to go, and I can't say impossible, but it's just, I think it'd be very hard to figure out where you're going if you don't know where you are, you know, like even because we do have that, you know, that basal instinct. Cause like, you're just like, when you're a young boy too, you're like, I need to nut or I'm going to explode. Right. And the reason that is what is felt is because as young boys, we're not taught that is our creative expression. That is our power, like our fucking gene. That's our power. And we're not taught how to hold that power as young boys. So we're sitting there, we're just trying to offload it so we don't have to feel uncomfortable and hold this energy, our own personal God mode. So we squander it. You know, as young, I remember masturbating sometimes 2-3 times a day. As a kid,
of course, like,
right?
13, you know, 14, 15 years old, like you think something's wrong with you, right? There's no conversation. There's nothing like that. It's just this really ironically ungodly pressure to be somewhere feeling something other than what you have to deal with. Like you have to deal with it so that it goes away.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. So masturbate. Just don't talk about masturbation. Don't get caught doing it. Do it as fast as you can behind closed doors. And... yeah, it's not, you know, there's like, I wish I would have had somebody like me, like an older brother or someone, to be like, hey man, I know you're 13 now, you're probably feeling this sort of way, let me explain to you what this actually is. And having that conversation, I mean, just imagine where you and I would be if we had that conversation with somebody we trusted at 13. You know, we'd be sitting there creating whatever we want on a whim, because it's just, we just know how to use that energy. I'm sorry, the question was finding where, you know, how they can come to that realization without examining, you know, where they're at, like why they're having sex. Like,
and maybe an offshoot of that is like, can it be done without the use of entheogenic plant medicines?
Yes.
Because that's really important for a lot of people that like are averse to that sort of thing.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. I think the only thing that's required is just the longing and the willingness for something better. That's it. Because I know there's so many people that now, like, everybody's having sex. If you're not, you could be having sex with yourself and you could be doing it consciously. So like, if you're somebody out there right now who is not 100% satisfied with their sex life, why not do something about it?
Right.
We have classes and things for everything else under the sun but sex, which is arguably one of the most pleasurable, important things that we can do as humans, because we're all doing it. Another podcast or another day, as the system is working perfectly, you know, so we'll talk about that another time. But the squandering of our sexual energy, like, why are we having sex, right? A lot of us are having sex because we want to relieve the tension, take a load off, you know what I mean, like get that sweet release, right? That's kind of how sex is viewed, as something to just offload frustration or offload this. And I don't think what a lot of people realize is you can intention your semen. You can intention the very stroke of your pelvis when you're having intercourse with your partner. I started experimenting with each thrust, saying, I love you. Like, you're safe. You are powerful, you're strong, you're wealthy, and like just essentially like humping affirmations into my partners, which is really just reflections of my love for them. that's where that term making love, like we're literally, you know, we're making love together. Like I am setting this intention, setting this container and opening my heart and allowing that sexual energy to flow along those microcosmic orbits instead of concentrating that energy in my pelvis, letting that container fill and then releasing the tension of that container with an orgasm or an ejaculation, because those are separate things, orgasm and ejaculation. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're somebody who doesn't view sex as anything more than just a physical act or, you know, an ejaculation, or if, you know, your solution for lasting longer in bed or being a better partner is harder thrusting, faster thrusting, numbing yourself out so you don't feel anything so you can last long in bed and be, you know, the big bad stud on campus. Like, I've done it all, right? Like, numbed with pot, alcohol, drugs, whatever it is, so that I could last longer, so that I could be the guy who gave her the most pleasure, which was a reflection, a shadow reflection of what I actually wanted was to serve the feminine, right? I wanted to be the best man that served that feminine woman. Like, I wanted to be the best she ever had. The only way that I knew how to do it when I was in my unhealthy expression of it was through sex, because I couldn't show up emotionally, financially, like mentally, like in any other way other than sex. That was how I did it. So I put all my eggs in that basket. And that's why I had such an unhealthy relationship with it, because I didn't understand the energetic dynamics of what sex could be. Mm. It was just, I was just going off of what I was taught, which was, you know, you got to be 8 inches long and you have to just like plow away and like that'll do the job. It's like, because that's what we see through porn, and that's our education. Instead of having somebody qualified educate us on the energetics of sex, we have to sneak porn around and just get into weirder and weirder shit, because we become number and number every time we do this.
Can you talk more on the concept of focusing on sensation and intention in your body and your partner's bodies aside from through your pelvis? Because yeah. I feel like that's one of like the core tenets of beginning to play with this, is that, I mean, even after you begin to try to bring awareness to this, you're going to catch yourself being like, I'm only paying attention to my crotch,
mm-hmm.
over and over again, instead of like breathing into your heart and mm-hmm. looking into your partner's eyes or whatever. Talk about the evolution of how to approach this, and then maybe what for you it's felt like to open up those channels.
Yeah, another killer question, brother. I'm so impressed with you, for real.
Appreciate it.
Such a great conversation.
Absolutely.
I would say, yeah, it starts in your pelvis, right? That's where your root is, and it's that's where it starts. And really, this is where like the imagination comes into play so much, is you take that feeling that you feel in your shaft, in your penis, and you just picture moving it. What I like to do personally is that energy, like I close my eyes and say I'm self-pleasuring, which is the thing that got me into this, essentially, was into this practice. I saw how I went from having sex the way I was to how I have sex now. Started with me developing a relationship with my own sexual energy and cutting out partners and not having sex with women, but making love to myself, making love like a king. A king doesn't lock all the doors and turn the lights down and like hide off to a corner and masturbate as fast as he can. He doesn't do that. He worships his divine cock. So what I started doing was masturbating like a king. I would make a whole event out of it, just like I would if I was courting a woman or a woman was coming over. I'd, you know, clean everything up, make it look all nice, light some incense, light some candles, maybe put on a playlist that I like to hear, you know, whatever it might be. The same way you would if you were going into a deep meditation,
yeah,
or a deep breathwork ceremony, because they're all getting us kind of to the same place, right? Sex is just a moving meditation with your partner. And so I got to the point, I stopped watching porn for quite a long time. Cut that out. I got that energetic signal pretty early. Like I didn't get lost in porn when I decided I didn't want to operate this way anymore sexually. That fell off pretty quick. With the fasting, actually, which is interesting connection. So it was very easy for me to visualize women, right? Attractive women I'd see at the store or anywhere. So I didn't use porn, so it was very easy for me to get sensitive. And that's really the main goal with developing a sexual energy practice, is increasing your sensitivity so you can feel more pleasure. So I would masturbate, imagine myself, I would take that feeling that I was feeling, the pleasure, and I would give it a color. So a color that I really like is kind of like a fuchsia-y, kind of like purple. And I'd give that energy a color. And as I'm going, I'm, you know, pleasuring myself. And it doesn't always mean like really like hard friction-y, like stroking, which we see a lot of times, like that, you know, the moniker of like, yeah, like da-da-da-da, like just that stupid shit. And, but just playing with myself, like really gentle. And like the goal is to increase our sensitivity, not to overwhelm ourselves and numb. So just really being soft. And this also really helped me get in touch with my feminine, because I would, you know, almost put feminine energy, like channel in my hands and just touch myself like a woman would touch me. And I would just imagine, you know, some beautiful woman touching me. And that transitioned into just me pleasuring myself and being turned on by nothing other than just the energy that I was feeling. Mm-hmm. I began to be able to just move energy down into my penis, feel that pleasure, and just build it from there. So I, you know, feel that, and I would move the energy. I would imagine it coming up my body and like going into my fingertips or going down into my toes. And I would sometimes like lightly stroke my body. I call it scraping. You can also do this to your partner as well. Like when you want, when you feel her getting close to orgasm, the energy is concentrating itself in her, like her womb space, in her vagina. And so scraping the energy out, it's almost like you poke holes in that little container and the energy then escapes into the rest of her body. Mm-hmm. So then now you take this small container that was holding yours and her sexual energy, and you break it open. So now that container gets bigger and bigger each time. So then when you get that release of an orgasm, you're feeling this much energy instead of this little pocket that you've created. And I would just do this to myself. And most of the time I wouldn't even ejaculate, wouldn't even orgasm really. I was just there to give myself pleasure and develop a relationship with pleasure. Because, you know, as men, we're just taught to like hammer everything, bludgeon stuff.
The word pleasure isn't even in like the dictionary for whatever education we may or may not have received, you know.
Yeah. It's viewed as a purely like physiological, oh, you get turned on, your penis goes up, you put it in a vagina, you come, and then it's done. It's like, all right, cool. And then that cum makes a baby and yada, yada. You're like, all right, sweet. Like, do we get to enjoy this at any point in time? Yeah. To which a lot of men, and what I did for a long time, I thought I was really great at sex. To which I think in general terms, I was, and I couldn't feel a thing because I would numb myself out so I could last long. Hmm. Another tactic I would use before I was able to do that was I would just give oral sex, right? So I would be the pleaser. And then when it came time to like actually have sex, like I'd get her off a couple times orally, and then I would have sex for like 2-3 minutes because that's all I could last.
Yeah, of course. She comes first, and then like it's because once I'm in, like the bell's going to go off real soon.
Yeah. 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 And so you're like, you can almost ensure that you'll get a repeat customer by at least making her come, because that's how bad we are at sex as a collective, as men.
Yeah. There's like one of the most popular sex books that like, that I know of is called She Comes First. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read it, but I've heard people talk about it in conversation, like on other podcasts. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that in this context, it sounds like terrible advice of what we're talking about right now. Yeah. But I've only heard it talked about in a positive context, but it's basically, you know, like, yeah, go foreplay all in because you're not going to last long anyway. Mm-hmm.
So it's like another Band-Aid.
Yeah.
It's like a tactic to kind of like sidestep it, but you're not addressing the actual problem, which is you're not in presence. Mm-hmm. You don't know what your own energy feels like, let alone your partner's.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's just the cycle goes on. So there was just always something more. There was that call of like, hey, there's more here, buddy. Like, there's more here. So yeah, that's essentially the name of the game is increasing your sensitivity. So, you know, cutting out the porn, getting your diet on track. A lot of times there are growing pains with this. So in my sexual energy journey, like in increasing my sensitivity, I do all this sexual energy work on myself, and then I'd have sex with a partner and I would last like 2 minutes. And I'm like, what the hell? I'm doing the work. It's like, yeah, except now you are way more sensitive. You're way more sensitive, and you have to learn how to move that much more energy now because you've built your sexual energy. You're walking around with this full cup because you're not coming, right? You're not watching porn. You're not squandering it. You're using it for these creative outlets. But now when you go to move energy with a partner, if you don't know how to move that through your body, you're going to come real fast because you're, especially because you're so sensitive. It's not a double-edged sword. So that means you're actually on your way, right? So once you get used to that, holding that much energy, and you get used to moving it, then when you have sex, like, you are experiencing insane amounts of pleasure. You are coming and having orgasms without ejaculation. And you're really feeling yourself open up to your partner. And then when you're done, there's no refractory period. Like, you feel even greater than you were before. Like, you feel even more energy. You're like, yeah, like, I'm ready to go. To now where I've even got to the point to where I do ejaculate and I'm able to stay in presence with my partner and I don't fade. You know, I don't fall asleep, right? There's some more advanced practices where you can really relax into it. And the intelligence of the body is so amazing. So, you know, when you really soften and you soften into the ejaculation instead of like really tensing up and like, when you soften into it, you keep your belly soft and you keep with that breathing, your body will release just enough semen to bring you back to balance.
Wow.
And you can continue going.
That's wild. I hadn't heard that part before.
Yeah. It's amazing the kind of stuff like, and this is like lived experience stuff. Like, mm-hmm. It went from, I'm glad you mentioned the books. Cause like there was, David Data is a huge influence of mine.
One of them is right over there.
Yeah.
Next to Urban Tantra.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. Enlightened Sex Manual. Yep. That is the one that really, really brought me to another level. And allowed me to start to understand as well, like the polarity dynamics, and just really how to treat a woman, because like I didn't have any role models.
I read His Way as Superior Man long before mm-hmm. I had known that you'd written that, because it's harder to find. Go figure.
Yeah.
And he is a really profound author. Not something that is hard to understand. It's just he states the obvious of how we all feel.
Yep.
And how to develop a better relationship with those masculine archetypal just ways of being.
Yeah.
You know,
which will trigger a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And if you're not regulating that nervous system and your diet's off, you're just not, it's going to go right over your head and you're going to be like, fuck this guy. Missing out on this whole realm of possibility for you and your partner. And really it's like, I kind of use the hook in my own coaching of like, you know, be the best she's ever had, which is like a nice hook because like as men, we're just taught that like, we're just here to serve. And a lot of times, like, you know, our own pleasure goes to the wayside, but really it's like what's waiting for you on the other side of this work is an increased level of sensitivity that even extends outside the bedroom, right? When you know, feel a hug from your daughter or a loved one or somebody, like you're just that much more in presence and like you feel the pleasure and like the heart opening nature of living your life that way, like that with that insensitivity, it's just, it's a gift. And we're just not educated about it. So that's the meta dream for myself is helping men find their pleasure and find their presence and then use that to serve their communities and their partners. And yeah,
that's awesome, man. Mind-blowing stuff. I want to ask, at one point I expressed that there is an interplay, obviously, between the man and the woman looking for an evolution of their sex life together. When, you know, you've done the work on your own, you come back together, you try to make some beautiful art, you
know? Yeah.
There is this void of information where you can learn, like, about pussies all you want. You can learn about your own dick all you want.
The physiology.
Like, you can learn about all your body. You can get into the breathwork practices. You can learn to cycle that energy up through the microcosmic orbit. And then, like you kind of just expressed, you go into the bedroom and things kind of fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things is what you just said, where you're so much more sensitive and you got to learn. It's like starting from square one. It's like almost like you graduated first grade, you went on summer vacation, you come back in second grade, and all of a sudden you don't know anything anymore. That's what it feels like.
That's such a fucking great analogy.
It's so funny. I just came up with that. But anyways.
Well done.
Then there is the part that I personally ran into at some point that we both had to work past, is that if you're doing the work on your own and your partner knows you're doing the work, but there's no conversation about what is changing or what your intention is bringing that into the bedroom, then things can almost not work.
Yeah.
Like it won't, because if your partner doesn't know that you're trying to hold this higher space of love and presence and all encompassing just beauty, and you're trying to fully be there. Well, if you don't tell her that you're trying to fully be there, then she's going to be in the same place that she's been in for like the last decade or whatever, however long you've been with your partner. So what does the conversation look like? And what are some ways that the man or woman you're with needs to be kept in the loop for this enhanced experience?
Yeah. I would say it's the communication. You can't have this level of sex without the communication piece. You could try, and like, it's just going to be harder. Like, so why do that to yourself? So, I think there's a fun aspect to surprising your partner a little bit, right? So as a man, I just generally love surprises. Like I just really enjoy that aspect of life. So like, if I was a man and I was looking to start this practice, I would jump into it, right? And start doing it on my own. Cause that's really, like I said before, you can't feel your partner's energy if you don't know what your own feels like. So start that practice of being a little more present when you masturbate, or next time you have sex, be a little more present. Like really, what I like to do with my partner sometimes is I'll just really get lost in a kiss. Like I'll feel every cell butted up against every cell of hers. I try to feel into that microscopic thing, and it really like brings me into presence and that feeling nature. And like maybe like the first time you start doing this work, see if your partner notices a difference, because it's kind of a nice little like litmus test of like, oh, like she might say like, oh, like something got into you tonight, or you know, XYZ. And it gives you a good gauge as well as like, oh, did this practice work? Whereas if there's two moving pieces to it where it's like you tell her, now she's like thinking about what you're thinking about during sex, I feel like maybe you could kind of have a tendency to both overthink it a little bit. Whereas if you just dive in like, okay, I've been working on this thing the last couple of weeks, like I really want to try it out on my partner, and I'm just going to get real present and I'm going to try this out, right? And you get going and you're like, wow, like this is like, I'm like really like feeling more pleasure. I'm able to like have much more control over my ejaculation. Like she's loving it, because when you are in your power, for men typically leans more towards like masculine or alpha energy. When you're in that power in sex, she naturally, right? She plays off of you. She'll naturally fall into her feminine, and really she'll feel a little bit of that surrender, right? There's a little limiters placed, if your partner's maybe not doing a lot of the work, or you're just not familiar with that space, there's some limiters that keep you from opening too far, because there's a lot of healing that happens during sex, and a lot of things come up when that energy is moving, especially when you become present. Mm. Like, I've had partners who have cried during orgasm, or it goes from like being very pleasurable to being like very painful, especially when a woman's cervix, a woman's pussy, a woman's clitoris, when they start to wake up, right? Because they've been numb for so long, because they've been mishandled and mistreated by numb and unconscious men. So there's some scarring there, emotional scarring. The body keeps the score, right? Everything's held in the body, especially in the cervix. And this is another beautiful like reason. So like, my partner is super involved in the work, and right now she's focused heavily on the cervix. And she's in a container, a really beautiful container, where she's learning about that whole system. And I've learned through her that it's such a cool thing. This might blow your mind as well, but the cervix is the starting point to the vagus nerve. Mm. The vagus nerve ends bottom wise at the cervix. So that's why cervical orgasms are so shattering, because you're literally resetting your vagus nerve, like back to square one, right? Back into a state of pleasure. And a lot of times the rest of our body doesn't even know what that life feels like. Hmm. So there's this like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I just had mind blowing sex, and now I'm like depressed or sad, or like, I feel crazy, like, because it just stirs up all the shit. So there's limiters in place to keep that kind of from happening. And so that's why it's so important to increase your sensitivity as a man. Because then when you bring this new level of yourself to your partner, there is the sensitivity to be able to feel yourself, but also to listen to what her body needs. Because if she's been used to, you know, she's stuck in that loop of men just hammering away at her and not caring for her, the sacredness of her womb, her sexual energy, that might be all she knows. She might think that that's what her body wants, that that's what she feels like, because she stays up here during sex. But when you bring that level to her, she's going to drop into a place that she's never been before, and that's going to be a little bit scary. So having these tools and the awareness to be able to hold that space for her is what is missing in our culture. Like, that is where so much healing between lovers, between the masculine and feminine as a collective, that's where it lives. Right, I think, is in the sex, because I mean, we've either controlled women through sex, right? Like, not allowing them to have, you know, like we play with different rules as men and women, right? Like, if you have sex too much as a woman, you're a slut. If you have sex too much as a man, like, you're a player, and it's also kind of celebrated, right? Like, it's there's a lot of fucked up, very contradicting, like, unspoken rules for men and women around sex. Yeah, I think the conversation is great to have after, like, maybe like the first time, right? You really bring this new version of yourself, this new intention to sex. Because once that happens and you get a taste for it, like, if you're any kind of man worth your salt, like, I think you're going to fucking love it. And you're going to be like, wow, like, I really want to serve my partner in this way. So having the conversation, say like, hey, babe, like, this is what I've been working on. Like, how did you feel during that? And check in with her. This is something that me and Kelsey do, is after sex, we'll have a conversation dissecting the sex that we just had. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, what were you feeling? Like, you know, what did you really like on the physical aspect, but really, like, what were you feeling emotionally, like, energetically? Like, what did you feel? Because it's so important for us, for the work that we do together as well, but also for us to just to stay on the same page and know that we can now trust what we're feeling in here. We can confirm that trust that we're feeling through words, like, oh, I was feeling that, oh, you were feeling that too, okay, cool, because I was feeling that, but I wasn't sure if it was just me thinking too much. You know what I mean? Like, it's beautiful, because you can now develop so much more trust with yourself, like that listening piece of, you know, when me and Kelsey are in the throes, I'll be listening and I'll be going a little more intensely, right? Like, making love to her, and then I'll get the feeling that, like, I should slow down, almost do a complete halt and just hold her, right, and wait. But if I ignore that signal and I just fall away, we can miss that moment of deepening. And you start to not care for her vulnerability in that moment. She's completely open to you. And yeah, there's so many threads to go on in that, but it's really that piece of listening and just letting her know in her most vulnerable space, which a lot of times is during sex, because of that opening, if she knows that you are listening and that you care and that you can forego your own pleasure or your own need for release or ejaculation to make sure that she's safe and cared for, that's going to translate outside of the bedroom.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like the entire human race is made up of healers. If that is the way that we're approaching it.
Yeah.
Like every single, obviously said many times now, healing happens, and given specific examples for what awakens and what is brought up during a situation where you and her are both trying to hold each other in this context of higher perspective while you're united. And I just almost want to say that it's how it's supposed to be.
Mm.
And it's been forgotten.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when sex is any other way, it's kind of like, I can feel how triggering it is to people just me wanting to say this. But when sex is any other way, it is contributing to perpetuation of trauma-based behavior where future generations are going to be harmed in the same way that we have been through this shame that's cycling around the subject.
Yeah.
Because you want to talk about having shame triggered for yourself. Try having that first conversation about the sex you just had after you have sex. That is a hugely, it's not triggering in a bad way, but it's a hugely triggering concept in your mind. I want to talk about this, but the tightening in your system of like, before the first time you pitch that idea of like, hey, you want to talk about like how our sex has been? That leads to incredible conversations. Yeah. But before you've had one of them, it is a scary as fuck concept.
Yeah. Because that's our vulnerable place for both ends, right? So when we can't measure up, or we don't, you know, there's penis envy, like for size, for how long you last, for all that stuff. And it's like, if you really want to measure like how far you've come as a man, try coming within like the first minute or two during sex and be able to be in that and face that with your partner and like let her and not leave like emotionally, right? Or energetically leave, where you're like just embarrassed and you're like, oh my God, I didn't show up in this and that, because like we're gonna fuck up as men. And if you can quote fuck up or not perform or come really fast, be in there with it with her and be like, hey, like, man, I was just really like, I was really sensitive there and I couldn't move the energy. I really wanted to make love to you longer. If you can be in that and have that conversation after you've ejaculated, so you're in a weakened state, you're in a vulnerable state. If you can have that conversation, not leave, be there present with her and know that, like, let her know that the next time it happens, like you're going to show up different or show up better. Like you're just going to continue to try to work and improve. If she knows that in that most vulnerable state that you can eat it, hold on, hold that shame, hold that resentment and not destroy yourself with it and just continue to show up for her down the road. Like that is going to build a level of trust in your relationship. That's like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's literally like relationship steroids, right? Like it's just going to like, it's going to grow and just make you so strong. Like it's, yeah. And I've noticed having these conversations, how it's affected Kelsey and I's relationship. And we've gone from, you know, like I told you, we had that like 6 week, 5 to 6 week period where we were just like grinding through it. And like, we weren't really having sex, and the sex we were having, we even talked about, was like, kind of like a little more shallow. We just were afraid to kind of open to each other because, you know, we were staying open and so vulnerable in our conversations that when it came time for sex, it was just, we were so tired. like we couldn't really drop in all the way, so we would just be like, okay, but one of us, we both need to kind of like orgasm here, so like let's just do it. But we were conscious of it, and that I think is the difference of, you know, what makes a relationship good versus what makes a relationship like one of a kind. Yeah, it's those conversations. And I haven't always been great with those conversations. Kelsey showed me a lot, but I've been able to dig in with her and be the guy who comes really quickly, is able to own it, and then the next time, like, he puts it down. You know, and like it's I think a lot of it too, which is funny, is like we almost need that as a man. It's almost like when you declare this journey for yourself, you're gonna come across these opportunities where like no matter what you do, like you're gonna fucking eat shit. You're gonna fall flat on your face. You're gonna be embarrassed. You're gonna be full of shame. And if you can still show up, that's your initiation.
That's good shit.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah. It's really awesome. The people who are tired and don't have the space and don't have the time, where do they start? You know, where do they start if they're just exhausted and it's just to get it over with?
Mm-hmm. Where do they start? I think similar to before, they start like declaring that they want something different, right? They want something different and that they're willing to do the things necessary. So one thing you can do when you are first getting into it, right? Like say your diet's not on track, you're not really working out, like you don't really feel great within your body, is in little moments, just getting into presence, getting into that deep presence, just feel the wind on your skin, right? Feel the sun on your face. Breathe, feel the air in your lungs and start there. And just doing that, I think, is going to elevate your vibration just enough to where you're not going to want to spoil that with a bag of Doritos. Right? You're going to start, in doing that, you're going to start to respect yourself a little bit more, and you're going to start to not allow that old shit that's just keeping you down. And so that might look like starting because of just getting into presence and declaring and like having the willingness, like maybe you start going to the gym once a week. Maybe you stop eating, you know, just a few less little Debbies, right? Like, and you start to move into like, oh, well, I'm just going to start drinking some water, right? Instead of sodas and things like that. And those little changes, you're going to get some nice rewards from that. And just that presence factor, when you really become a pro at getting present, it almost doesn't matter what you eat. It almost doesn't matter what you do, like, because you are just a master at getting into presence. I'm not there quite yet. That's the goal. And I think that's where it starts and ends, is with the presence and seeing how that unfolds for you. Because what your sexual expression looks like right now, once you actually learn who you are as a sexual being, it might look totally different. You might be in a marriage, right? Have a couple kids. Begin the journey of, you know, figuring out like who you are as a sexual being. And you might find out that you and your wife are swingers. You might find out that you're gay. You might find out any number of things. And they're all beautiful expressions because you're finding out who you actually are. So that presence factor is, I would say, the key thing to the key place to start, that's easy, that you can do right now.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother. Yeah. This is a blast.
This is incredible. This is a great conversation. I really thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Your presence, your vulnerability. Like, it's really, really powerful having you dive so deep into your story, into the wisdom that you've ascertained from being through what you've been through. So, yeah. Thank you for blessing the show with your presence.
Thank you, brother. It was such a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll do it again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hell yeah.
All right. Until next time.
Until next time, brother. A lot of love.
A lot of love. Okay. How about that one, everybody? Whew. That was heavy. That was deep. I love that so much. Listening back was such a joy. I still have time with myself and time with my partner to implement. I love the concepts that we've gone over here, especially like conversations about conversations, conversations about acts of intimacy, bringing
those moments of present awareness even to moments where you weren't present and you weren't aware, like bring that review more into your life. And I'm a huge fan of what I call couples review, where Emily and I sit down and talk about a little bit of everything and anything, of what we've been up to lately, how we've been feeling about each other and ourselves, and what we want to see more or less of moving forward. And I think that bringing more specificity into those types of moments with your partner or with yourself can be really, really powerful. So I have a lot of takeaways myself here, and I hope that you guys did too. I hope that you enjoy. If you listened this long, then thank you so much for sticking with us. This one was heavy at times, but it was also really uplifting and inspiring. And I want to thank Josh for taking the time to come and sit down with me as one of my only in-person interviews for the show so far. And it was a blast having him here and being able to sit across the table from him in my own office, which is a healing space of its own. And so that the container was really powerful. And other than that, don't forget to go rate and subscribe, and make sure your friends are subscribed, and send the episode to a friend if they are in need of this kind of information. And also leave us a rating on Spotify as well. It's on iTunes, so you can leave us a review, as I'm sure most of you already know. That's the best way for you to show me that the show means something to you, and for you to help us get out in front of more people, which helps us grow the show, and it helps legitimize the project always ongoing that we're trying to achieve here, where we're bringing more space and awareness and presence into your lives through these conversations. And as always, until next time, remember that you are loved, that you are never alone, that you hold infinite value and meaning in this life, and that if you need a reminder of any of that, do not hesitate to reach out. Okay. And move onward from the heart, everybody. Until next time. Hare Krishna.